Did you know that Gazette print subscribers have full access to digital content at no extra cost? Activate your digital subscription now to enjoy the latest headlines, sports updates, and more at thegazette.com or through the Gazette mobile app. Read the page-by-page daily newspaper with the Green Gazette, perfect for on-the-go reading. Activate your subscription at thegazette.com/activate or call 319-398-8333.
How's it going, everyone? Jeff Johnson from the Gazette here, along with my cohort, KJ Pilcher. We are giving you another edition of the Triple Option Podcast, though it's really a double option.
Dual threats.
Yes, exactly. Our cohort, Jeff Linder, is at state volleyball, has been all week, so he's a little busy. He's still going to cover a game though on Friday night for us because he's that dedicated and that good.
Yes. So,
let's dive right in, I guess. Let's run through Pilch. We had our round of 16 last Friday night, and you know what? Let's go reverse order this time, just for giggles.
Okay.
Our A player pods look like this. Algona Garrigan over North Union, 50-15. Don Bosco over Clarksville, 69-32. That's pod A. Pod B, Woodbine shuts out Southeast Warren, 68-0. Fremont Mills gets past Bedford, 40-28. Pod C, Gladbrook-Rhinebeck and Easton Valley. Gladbrook-Rhinebeck, your winner there, 56-6. Edgewood-Colesburg beats Turkey Valley, 34-12. Pod D, a couple of shutouts, believe it or not. Iowa Valley 63-0 over Janesville, and Audubon 82-0 over Montezuma. Thus, when you look at eight-player quarterfinals, which are tomorrow night, we're taping this on Wednesday, so it will be Thursday night. We got Don Bosco at Garrigan, Fremont Mills at Woodbine, and then the two pods with Eastern Iowa. Consideration here is Edgewood Colesburg at Gladbrook Rhinebeck and Audubon at Iowa Valley. I will be in Gladbrook. I think it's Gladbrook.
Rhinebeck.
It is Rhinebeck. Okay, there we go. Good. I would have went to Gladbrook and go, where's the field? And you will be in Marengo.
Marengo.
And with calculator at the ready.
Yeah.
Between Audubon and Iowa Valley. And let's see, Audubon averages 72 points per game. Iowa Valley, 64.8. Ready, set, go, right?
Yeah, this could be a six-hour game. And the ironic thing is, hope I'm using irony, right? They're both coming off shutouts.
Yeah.
So they're being – you know, teams that have, you know, made their beds with their offense, doing work with their defense last week. And I don't think those goose eggs are going to hold up tomorrow night at Iowa Valley. Like you said, two of the top scoring teams in the state. And, of course, you've got some really good individuals kind of leading the way. I think we've talked about Nolan Kriegel quite a bit, obviously, for Iowa Valley. You know, he leads the state with 58 total touchdowns. He's rushed for 41 of those. I think he's third in eight player with 1,713 yards rushing. And he has over 2,500 yards to rank about fifth in eight player. He's going to be expected to kind of carry the load for the Tigers. And, you know, Audubon's got some pretty good, playmakers themselves. Aiden, Kiergaard, over 1900 yards, of offense. He's rushed for 1256 and 30 touchdowns. Mason Casper Bauer, Paxton Bean, two running backs that have combined for over 1,200 yards and 25 touchdowns. And then ought to have been special teams. Pretty darn good as well. So this is gonna be a shootout. It's gonna be a fun game. You know, whichever defense can get a stop or two, that might just be the difference. You know, Iowa Valley, this is their fifth quarterfinal appearance and first since 2018. The interesting thing for Iowa Valley, even though you can't really factor the past into much, but they're 3-1 all time in quarterfinal games, and they've won their last three, including that 2018 game. So, I take that back. They're 3-4, 3-1 overall. They've won two of their last three. So we'll see if that bodes well for Iowa Valley's making their first quarterfinal since 2018.
Folks, if you haven't seen an eight-player game, it is you'll understand quickly why there's so many points. The field is shorter, narrower. Obviously, there's only eight guys and not 11, which, you know, if a guy breaks into the open, he's going, basically.
But, and that's the thing. A lot more open space for and that's why you see, you know, individuals that can make such a big difference, because if you can get them out in that open area, if you can get them one-on-one, their chances of making a big play are that much better. And when you have good teams, they take advantage of that. Yep, and these two teams certainly fit the bill.
And the other game I think is really, really interesting. You have GR, Gladbrook-Rhinebeck, which has been such a power. It was a Class A power before dropping to eight-player. And Edco, since it's gone to eight-players, has been incredibly successful as well. So two teams that score right about the same pace. Pilchy, Jack Steger. Sorry, I told Coach that I get it right. Jack Steger, even though it's spelled S-T-E-G-E-R. He's a sophomore quarterback who's really stepped in and done an amazing job. So I don't know. I would think either team could win that game tomorrow night. Would you agree?
Oh yeah. I mean, when you're 10-0 and get to this point, you obviously have earned every win. You know, and anything can happen. I know it's cliche and it's kind of one of those goofy comments, but man, we've seen it time and time again where you know, you just depends on who's at the top of their game on this night. And if you stumble a little bit, the teams are just too good that you're facing to be able to play anything but your best, right?
Yep.
And, you know, you mentioned Steger. I think a lot of people kind of wondered what it was going to be like when there wasn't a Rochford kind of running the show on the field, right? Because, you know, those guys have really been huge assets for the Edco program. Parker, Price, and those guys. And Steger has just kind of grabbed the baton, grabbed the reins of the offense, and they haven't skipped a beat. You know, he's had 49 total touchdowns, which is third in eight-player. Now he's going to be facing a pretty darn good defense with Gladbrook-Rhinebeck, and the Rebels have a really good offense as well. Trevor Mathern, huge player, averaging 14.2 yards per carry. You know, when you need 3 1/3 for a first down, getting 14.2 per rush is pretty impressive. So, can Edco's defense contain him and Hudson Clark, you know, who's a very capable passer? We'll see. That's going to be key. And we've talked about eight players wide open lots of point style of play. Gladbrook Rhinebeck has only allowed 8.1 points per game, and they've scored 10. They've scored 10 touchdowns defensively. So their defense is almost outscoring opponents, which is crazy to think about. So that's going to be something to kind of keep an eye on, whether Ed Coe can contain Gladbrook's offense and whether Gladbrook's defense can keep that up and not just hold Ed Coe down, but maybe even get some points of their own.
We need to point out the reason they're playing tomorrow night, Thursday, eight player, is because the semifinals next week at the Unidome will be held on Wednesday. So
you got to give them time to recover.
Yeah, a little bit shortened weeks for the eight player program, and actually next week will as well for a couple other classes when you consider there's games on Thursday, Friday, Saturday. So, moving on up to Class A, when you look at the round of 16, MMCRU beat Lamar's Galen 37-0, Woodbury Central 21-0. In Pod A, those two teams will play at Marcus in the quarterfinals. Pod B is St. Ansgar 53-20 over West Fork. North Lynn upset Pekin 21-3. Pod C is Adair Casey Guthrie Center over Mount Air 21-0. West Sioux against or beat Sibley O'Shaden 31-14 in Pod C. And then Pod D, Wapsie Valley 24-14 over Maquoketa Valley. And Linville Sully beats BGM 51-26. So it's Linville at Wapsie, West Sioux at ACGC. We mentioned Woodbury at MMCRU. And then the North Lynn Lynx get to go up towards the Minnesota border where they say A a lot and play St. Ansgar. It'll be a tall task. Pilchy, no doubt about it. St. Ansgar leads Class A in points per game at 49.7 and defensively gives up the fewest at 5.9.
Yeah. Pretty good formula, right? Pretty good ratio.
But this North Lynn team has played, with the exception of one game at the end of the regular season, has played terrific defense. And I always believe, and I'm sure you agree, is if you can play good defense, you're going to give yourself a chance to win, right?
Right. The saying's always defense wins championships, right? And
yeah.
And, you know, I think we kind of said this amongst ourselves that we might have slept on Wapsie a little bit.
Yeah.
Or maybe didn't give Wapsie its due. And North Lynn has been exceptional, and their one loss is to Wapsie. So this is a game, I know we mentioned it's a tough task, but, you know, North Lynn's coming off a heck of a performance where they just shut down Pekin 21-3. You know, it's a team that you've got somebody like Will Sommerfeldt who's made some big plays. The thing that really surprised me a little bit was Northland's ability to score defensively. You know, they're only allowing 10.7 points per game. You know, they shut out a previous number one during the regular season when they blanked Maquoketa Valley early on. But they lead Class A with, I think, 6 defensive touchdowns in their second
sacks. Is that right? Wow.
You know, so North Lynn's got a resume that they can put up against anybody right now. Now, St. Ansgar is number one for a reason. I mean, that's a team that's just dominated pretty much all year long. And as much as they really kind of pound the football running for 3,230 yards so far, scored 71 touchdowns, including 54 on the ground. Corbin Michaels has been great for them, almost 1,400 yards and 26 touchdowns rushing the ball. But it's not a team that you can just ignore the pass game. Porter Schwiesaw, 224 QB rating. Don't know how you get it that high, but he's thrown for 744 yards and 12 touchdowns. So as much as you'd like to just focus on stopping the run, St. Ansgar, you know, can take advantage if you leave the pass game open. But Northland's got, you know, a pretty balanced defense. And if you can get Sommerfeld free to make a few plays, you've got a puncher's chance.
I, in talking to head coach Jared Collum last week about the Pekin game, I asked for a scouting report on St. Ansgar, and he said big up front, and then running back, Corbin Michaels, who you mentioned, is 5'4", 180 pounds.
So you may not even see him until he's about 2 yards.
Exactly, right?
kind of hides behind those big fellers up front.
Yep. You never see him until you're staring at his rear end as he's running down the field.
So. Yep. Good point. Kind of reminds, when you have that kind of thing, it kind of reminds me of that scene in Top Gun where they're all talking about the dogfight practice. And I think it was Hollywood or somebody was like, they were going against Jester. And they're like, where'd Jester go? And he's like, where'd who go? Because they lost him immediately. So it'd be like, where'd Michaels go? Where'd who go? And then he's celebrating the touchdown. So we'll see.
Oh, let's move on up to Class 1A. Our round of 16 last week, Pot A saw West Lyon handily over Lawton Bronson 63-7, and Underwood doubling up West Marshall 42-21. They will play at West Lyon in the quarterfinals. Pod B, Grundy Center over Clarion Goldfield Dallas 42-7. Dyersville Beckman shuts out Sigourney Kyoto 35-0. Pod C, Iowa City Regina over Cascade 52-13. Pleasant Villa over Hudson 33-20. And then Pod D was South Hardin shutting out Ridgeview 20-0. Trainer over Hinton 35-12. Trainer at South Hardin, Pleasantville at Regina, and Beckman gets to go to Grundy Center, a team or a school, a program that's won 49 straight games. Right. So what do you see here? Pilch, it's been a great season regardless of what happens for Beckman, right?
Oh, for sure. For sure. I mean, that's one thing where, you know, I really hate to say this, but, you know, if you're Beckman, I think you're kind of looking at the fact that you're playing with house money.
Yeah.
Right now. I think everybody has really pointed to the top three in that class, and rightfully so, in my opinion. You know, you've got Grundy, West Lyon, and Regina as the teams kind of leading the way, and then you're looking at a fourth team to join them. So you've got nothing to lose. You know, they have they've had a great season, 9 wins, for just the third time since 2013. You know, it's their 7th quarterfinal. The last one was in 2021. So, you know, just go out there and you know, throw the kitchen sink at them, do what you do best, and, you know, hope for the best, I guess. You know, but both teams are really good defensively. Beckman, 8.2 points per game. Grundy only gives up 6.1. You know, Beckman's got some talent. Offensively, Jude Kramer kind of leads the way, 803 yards rushing, 15 TDs. Brady Gogol, almost 1,000 yards passing. So, you know, they can tally up some points when they've had to. Of course, this is going to be a little bit of a different beast with Grundy Center and you know, Beckman's going to have to try to stop Judd Dravosky. You know, he's just been outstanding, great multi-sport athlete for Grundy, and it seems like he's been a part of their football lineup forever. You know, he's had another season where he's over 2,000 yards and over 30 touchdowns. The thing that I thought was interesting is I've never really thought about him on the defensive side, but defensively he's got 5 interceptions. So he's somebody that makes a difference, makes an impact on both sides of the ball. He's only thrown 1 interception to 19 TDs, great ratio, but Beckman is third in 1A with 17 picks. So Carter White and Tate Reese have five interceptions apiece for the Blazers. And, you know, maybe if they can get some pressure on him, the secondary can make some plays and get some turnovers, that'll help Beckman's chances. But that's easier said than done.
Yes, for sure. And then you look at that other game. I think, you know, Regina's probably as big a favorite over Pleasantville as Grundy probably is over Dartsville Buckman. And you did a really nice story you covered Regina last week, and they lost their team chaplain unexpectedly. Regina, that is. Short illness, type of a situation. And they dedicated that win over Cascade last week to him. And I imagine they'll probably be dedicating the rest of the season to the father as well, right? Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, Father Guillermo Trevino. He's a priest out of West Liberty. I think it was a parish out of West Liberty, but he's been a part of Regina as a chaplain. And he was the guy that was a huge supporter. Regina coach Dustin Ellsbury said he was always on the sideline, home and away games. He was taking pictures. He loved posting updates on social media. He was taking selfies and selfies and video on the sidelines, and was always smiling. He was the guy that would come in at halftime and lead the team in halftime prayers. Just a staunch supporter of Regina football. Dustin Ellsbury said he got a text just a few days prior, because Father Trevino had been overseas in Rome for work. And he had missed the last two games. So he was all excited about getting back for that round of 16 game against Cascade, and texted Coach Ellsbury, said, "Hey, I can't wait to be back with the team." And of course, passed away before he was able to come back. The team found out about it Friday. Kyle Tracy said the team met, said, "Hey, we had enough motivation to go out there and win anyway, because, it being the playoffs, but it just added a little more to it, doing it for Father Trevino." And, somebody that I think he would have been pretty happy with their performance. They came out right away and dominated, and big favorites this week against Pleasantville as well, even though they're going to have to put up with Braylon Bingham from Pleasantville. He's had a great season where he's thrown for over 1,300 yards, has 795 yards rushing as well. So a dual threat that they're going to have to try to put the clamps on. And Bingham, to his credit, also the best tackler on the team with 56 total tackles for Pleasantville. So you talk about a guy that does everything. Kind of reminds me of Mark Atwater a little bit. Okay. Remember him? As a linebacker and quarterback, unlikely combo when he was at Linmar. So he does a little bit of everything. That he's going to have a heck of a game if Pleasantville is going to want to knock off Regina.
Moving up to 2A, we'll give you the scores quick here. From the round of 16, Pade saw Carol Kuemper get past OABCIG 26-15. Kuemper has been number one, I think, pretty much all season in the rankings. And they will face Cherokee, will host Cherokee, which beat Orange City Unity Christian 40-14. And then Pod B saw PCM defeating Cinderella Pella Christian, which came in with, I think, two wins and won the first round game, if I remember right.
Yep.
So anyway, 45-21 PCM. Wilton, in a score that surprised me, just the spread was Wilton beat West Branch 30-7 at West Branch. So
it's Wilton. You know, that one at halftime, I think, was 8-7.
Is that right?
So they really dominated that second half.
Wow.
Or not dominated, but they were in control of that whole second half.
Apparently. Sure. Pod Seesaw, Van Meter over Roland. Story 24-14, Mid-Prairie shutting out Meepo, Mediapolis 46-0. Pod D, Osage, continues its undefeated season, beating Hampton, Dumont, Cal 27-7. And Albernette doubles up and plus two over Waukon 34-16. So Albernette gets to go way up north to play Osage on Friday night in the quarterfinals. And Mid-Prairie gets a home game against Van Meter. So Van Meter, again, one of the best small school programs in the state, won four state championships, two runners up here all within the last 20 years. And, you know, I think you are doing a story on Mr. Lake and Caves of Albernette. Is that accurate?
Yep. Yep. That'll be our weekly feature here. Going to dive into kind of that the family aspect. You know, it comes from a family of really good athletes there at Albernette, and obviously he's carried the baton pretty well.
Yeah,
just a difference maker on the field for Albernette. I mean, he's their top rusher and receiver. He's got more than 2,100 yards and 25 TDs offensively. Of course, we saw, you know, I think we talked about it before, but, you know, injury kind of hurt an ankle early in the season and decided, hey, we're just going to focus on offense until you get healthy or until we really, really need you on the defensive side. So they open up the playoffs, the postseason against Crestwood. They have him playing in the secondary and he gets two interceptions, two key interceptions. In the second half in a very close game. So just a different
dude. Yep.
Yeah. I mean, that prototypical dude that coaches like to talk about, just very talented, very athletic, very, very savvy as well. And of course he's going to be key for Albernette to knock off Osage. And, you know, interestingly, when I first saw this, I was like, oh, boy, that's going to be a tough one for him. Going up there, Osage is undefeated. They've done so well. But Albernette's already knocked off two district
champs.
Two other teams from
that district. Okay.
Yeah, Crestwood and Waukon are both finished behind Osage in that district. And interesting that the scores with those two teams for Osage and Albernette are pretty similar. So if you're, if you're using that, that transitive property, it should be a close game. You can get burned by that a little bit. Osage does have, they kind of counter Caves with Quinn Street. He's got 3,100 yards of total offense, 39 touchdowns, throwing for over 1,700 and rushing for 1,400. The one thing that I think is going to be key, it's going to be positive yardage for Albernette's offense because Osage, they have 105 tackles for loss and 24 and a half sacks. So they live on the opponent's side of the line of scrimmage. If Albernette can just kind of push and keep from giving up those losses, that's going to help their chances and protect the ball. Cause Osage has forced 19 turnovers. So, you know, if you can just methodically move the ball down, maybe break a couple with Caves, that could be a chance for Albernette to get to the semifinal. And I think that would be their first trip to the Unidome.
We talked before, Pilch, about Mid-Prairie and how, we all were very high on Mid-Prairie coming into the season and then, lost the second game of the season to Albernette, which we didn't know, or at least I didn't know that Albernette was going to be as good as it is, 42-37. In a high-scoring game, and Mid-Prairie has bounced back from that and run the table has a win over Wilton, which also is in the, you know, in the their It's Pod Championship game. So, why not the Golden Hawks, right? Here against Van Meter?
Yeah, you know, why not? And they've been sneaky good all season. They've kind of Golden Hawks flying under the radar a little bit. I think this is their second straight season in the quarterfinals. Mm-hmm. So they've got that experience. I think it might have been lost to Wilton last year in the quarters. But it's their seventh quarterfinal in program history. And, you know, they, Hudson Ehrenfeld has been, you know, a key piece for them. He's obviously their leader on offense, a real versatile running back, over 1,500 yards, 21 touchdowns, 980 and 15 on the ground. But they also have a little bit of a passing game with Brooks Weber, you know, Caden Koss, Carson Humphrey, you know, so they have the ability to air it out if they need to. Defensively, they've got 12 interceptions. I think Humphrey has four of those, and 26 total turnovers. So they're ball hawks on that side of the ball too. And they're second in 2A with a 27.7 point margin of victory so far this season. But I think this is by far going to be their toughest challenge. You know, Van Meter, a couple losses, and I think maybe some people might have sold the stock on the Bulldogs at one point in the season, but they've really battled back, played really well. The thing that blows my mind about Van Meter, they have made the last 10 semifinals. They have a streak of 10 straight semifinals. And you mentioned the championships and runner-up finishes that they've had, but just getting to the Dome 10 straight years is phenomenal. Henry Lounsbury, dual-threat quarterback for them. Christian Williams, who has done yeoman's work in the backfield, 826 yards on 145 carries this season. So this should be a good one down at Wellman.
Class 3A, we look at last week's round of 16. Clear Lake shut out Mount Vernon 41-0. The spread there really surprised me that you could shut out Mount Vernon, a high-flying offense, even more impressive. But, you know, I saw Clear Lake. They are legit, obviously. And they will host Nevada, which edged Carroll 21-14 in the other game in Pod A. Those two teams played to a 21-14 game in the regular season with Clear Lake winning. So, could be interesting with the rematch here. Pod B saw Solon over Benton Community 31-6, a game that was way different. Benton Community in the regular season played Solon on its ear and almost won that game. Not so much this time around. Solon got off to a quick start. And Solon will host Winterset, which beat Independence 28-6. That's Pod B. Pod C, West Delaware 35-21 over Mount Pleasant. And Dubuque Waller shut out DeWitt Central 38-0. So it's Waller at West Delaware. Again, a rematch of a game from the regular season that West Delaware won. And then Pod D, Sioux Center 28-10 over Des Moines Christian. And Sioux City Healing beats Atlantic 28-6. Sioux Center at Sioux City Healing. And Healing won the regular season matchup there. So we have a lot of rematches. Right. Three of the four here from the regular season. So what do you make of Solon, Winterset, and West Delaware and Waller, KJ?
Okay, so I'm going to have to kind of go back to last week when I said, you know, I think Benton could be competitive with Solon. So I've got to give my heartfelt apologies to the Spartans for that one, because they certainly prove that to be a falsehood. You know, the Spartans are clicking right now, and I really like their chances. You know, Eli Campman's had a heck of a year for them. You know, and their defense has played really good. First in 3A in fumble recoveries, saw them force a lot of turnovers against Washington earlier in the year. You know, don't want to sell Winterset short, but I just really like Solon's ability to kind of air the ball out and move it around a little bit when you've got athletes like Maddox Kelly, you know, Caden Hooper as well, and the way their defense, you know, really kind of capitalizes on mistakes. You really got to like that. You know, Winterset's a run-oriented offense. They've rushed for over 2,200 yards. But I think that might even just work into Solon's favor a little bit. You know, and they've had the experience, you know, in this with their postseason tradition. I just like Solon. The 3A game I'm really looking forward to is Wallert West Delaware. That was a game I was at in the regular season where, you know, it was kind of back and forth. And the West Delaware, well, Wallert drove into West Delaware's 10, and West Delaware forced them, kept them out of the end zone in the final minute. Forced a turnover on downs and escaped with a 27-20 win. You know what you're going to get with West Delaware. Yeah, they're going to pound the ball at you. Sure. You know, Austin Schneiders, Jack Cantwell, McCoy Rowling, those three, you know, they've rushed for almost 3,000 yards, 29-65 actually, and 41 score. So you know what you're going to get. Wallert's well aware of it, but trying to stop it is something totally different. And the only team that's been able to do that so far is Clear Lake. You know, the Golden Eagles, their revenge tour, right? They got beat by Central DeWitt and avenged that in a pretty emphatic way, 38-0 last week. Can they do it again? It'll fall on the shoulders probably of J.P. Elbert. You know, he's their top passer and leading rusher. Almost 1,800 yards. So we'll see if it's going to be another one that'll come down to the very end. And in games like this, it's going to be, okay, what did we learn from the last time we played these guys? You know, it works on both sides. And whoever makes that adjustment or fixes those things, it's usually going to bode well for them in the rematch, and we'll see what team does. The one thing I will say really, really quick about West Delaware that I find simply amazing. And I was talking to Brad Stovey about this earlier today. West Delaware did not have a returning lineman starter on the offensive line. So they've rushed for almost 3,000 yards with a whole new cast of linemen. And usually you have one person that's got experience and, you know, you can at least have him kind of direct and bring people together. You've got whole new starters up front. And I think that shows one great coaching job. Also tip of the fedora to those guys, because they're all green and they've come together and run the ball so well. That's a pretty good achievement, good accomplishment for them.
100%. Class 4A, as we move up to 4A here, Pod A saw Cedar Rapids Xavier shut out Waverly Shell Rock 47-0. Not a surprise, honestly, there. Adel DeSoto, Minburn, ADM, edged North Scott 27-24. So it's ADM at Xavier on Friday night. Coach Wink, Doug Winkiewicz, former West Delaware coach, as we've been talking about West Delaware. He comes back to Eastern Iowa for that one. Pod B, we saw Newton over Fort Dodge 51-7. Gilbert beat Council Bluffs Lewis Central 27-24. So it's Newton at Gilbert. Gilbert and Xavier, I believe, are the only two undefeated teams in the class remaining. Pod C, Sergeant Bluff Luton over Lamar's 42-7. North Polk beats Glenwood 35-21. So the defending champs, that's North Polk, goes up to or over to Sergeant Bluff Luton to play. And then Pod D, Pella 17-14 over Davenport North on a last second field goal. Decorah 25-24 revenge on Western Dubuque. Excuse me.
How about that finish? How about that finish?
Last, you know, what was it? 30 seconds, less than 30 seconds, I think. Touchdown for Tanner Cadell, the quarterback, on a 1 yard run. And then Coach Tangen, Mike Tangen, decides to go for the win. It goes for two. Cadell completes a pass in the end zone, on the front of the end zone. It was really close for the 2-point conversion, and the Vikings move on and will make, Pilch, a 3-hour and 30-minute bus ride to Pella for Friday night's quarterfinals. And I don't know if bus legs are a thing, but we will find out.
We'll find out.
That is a long, long trip for the Vikings.
Between them and Audubon, coming from Audubon to Marengo on Thursday. We'll find out.
Yeah, it almost seems on – it's like how in the heck do you put those put those pairings together? But, you know, again, as it's part of the reason why I guess Decorah doesn't have a conference.
up in no man's land.
They are up in no man's land, unfortunately. So, but what do you see? You know, Xavier, I would imagine, will certainly be favored over ADM, but ADM's only a one-loss team and had over 500 yards offense last week against a good North Scott team. And, you know, Pella Decorah certainly, it's got to be a coin flip game again if Decorah can keep its legs from that long bus ride.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I think we've talked about how Xavier has, looked like the best team in 4A most of the season. This is going to be another tough test for them. You know, we mentioned Winkiewicz and Schulte. Their paths have crossed before when he was at West Delaware, so they know, both of them know, it's going to be a physical, hard fought game. You know, you've got Hudson Scholl for ADM. He's got a couple good targets out there, but you know, he's passed for 1,473 yards. He's rushed for 1,092. Reed Obstarchik gives him another quality back, 930 yards and 17 scores for ADM. And the reason why I kind of emphasize the rushing part there with those two kind of reminds me a little bit of how North Polk had success against them last year, even though I think this is a better Saints team. But I think one of the ways that you're going to beat this Xavier team is by keeping the ball out of their hands, if that makes sense. Yep. And you've got Cash Parks doing what he's done, Carter Hoffman running the ball. Parks has been super efficient, completing 77% of his passes. They've been able to dial some deep passes up too. Ryan Kelly has been a top receiver, 36 catches, 635 yards, and 8 touchdowns. But if ADM can move the chains, running the ball and draining the clock, and then being able to put points on the board by keeping Xavier off the field, their offense off the field, that's going to be how ADM wins this game. But that's, like we've said a couple times, easier said than done. And, you know, you've got Parks, who's had a phenomenal season. Hoffman running the ball, and that's where, you know, that's where Schulte likes to kind of build off from, run the ball, and then open things up. You know, we'll see if that's going to be able to work. And, you know, Jim O'Connell's going to have something cooking to try to shut down that run game and try to get ADM into long passing situations. You know, so if they can – if Xavier can keep, you know, ADM from marching along and then avoid big plays – you like their chances. And then, you know, Decorah, at Pella. You know, this is two really, really good traditional programs. You know, this could be, another barn burner coming down to whoever has the ball last or whoever has the ball in the final minute to make a play. Pella's got a really good running back in Emmanuel Deers, who's had over 1,700 yards rushing. Both defenses have thrived with takeaways. I think 19 for Decorah and 16 for Pella. So you're going to have to protect the ball. And, I think this is the first meeting between the two teams since 2008. When they met in the state semifinals at Decorah, 137-20. So
was that Josie Jewell's team, maybe?
Might have been a little before then.
Yeah, yeah. I think it was, yeah, I don't think Josie's quite that old. Sorry, Josie.
But
all right, let's go up to class 5A, our final class. We in Pod A, West Des Moines Dowling over Waterloo West, 44-6. Iowa City West beat Cedar Falls, 38-31. That was a game that we knew would be kind of a shootout and would come down to the last seconds, and it did. And not surprised that West won, honestly. Pod B, Waukee Northwest over Indianola, 28-7. Sioux City East over Dallas Center Grimes, 28-14. Pod C, Johnston comes from behind and gets past Ankeny Centennial, 34-26. West Des Moines Valley edges Cedar Rapids Prairie, 26-20. Prairie played with Valley all the way, lost quarterback Kale Kongshog in the second quarter to a broken arm, which was a big factor, I would think, in that game. And then Pod D was Iowa City Liberty over Waukee, 34-20. Southeast Polk, the champs die hard, man. Four-time defending state champs, looking a lot like last season when they were under everybody's radar. They barely made the playoffs. Same type of situation here, and they beat Ankeny 21-14. So Iowa City West against West Des Moines Dowling, and I believe that game is at MediaCom Stadium, which is on Drake's campus. Because Valley will be hosting Johnston, I believe. Or maybe that's the other way around. Anyway, Valley and Johnston play Sioux City East at Waukee Northwest, and then Southeast Polk comes to Iowa City Liberty. Is this going to be all suburban Des Moines quarter or semifinals pilch? God, I hope not, but
I don't think so. I still like Liberty's chances to win. You know, this is a team. So Liberty waxed them right in the regular season.
Yep.
38-20, and it was 38-0 going into the fourth quarter.
And at Southeast Polk. Yep.
Yeah, at Southeast Polk, and Southeast Polk just added 20 really meaningless points at the end of that, right, on September 5th.
Yep.
So right there you're thinking, oh, man, hope Liberty didn't say anything to really light a fire under them that they're using for bulletin board material coming into this one. You also think, oh, that beating has Southeast Polk motivated, but I guarantee you, Scott Chandler or somebody has pointed out how they had Southeast Polk on the ropes last year in the Unidome, and Southeast Polk came back and beat them. And this team, from the first day of practice, when I went out and talked to Reese Redig and Pryor Reiners and Jordan Schrader and a couple others, they talked about how this was a team, even though they graduated some really good skill players, that they felt was a state title contending team, and that they learned from last year, and that they were focused and determined to get back to the Unidome. So they're going to be thinking about last year as well, and not just sitting back thinking, oh, hey, we beat these guys already once this season. Liberty is going to be fired up and ready to go, I think, for this one. And of course, it all stems around Reese Reddick. You know, he's the guy that really makes things click. Not just with the way that he runs the ball, but the way that he leads and the decisions that he makes on the field. And I still remember after the Iowa City West game, when they got that big win, overcame kind of a slow start, and Scott Chandler said, Reddick does so many things that people in the stands don't understand or don't see and don't realize that our success stems from his knowledge and his IQ. And that's going to serve them well, I think, you know, when you get to this quarterfinal round and if they're able to advance. So that's going to be big, maybe even bigger than the yardage or scoring production that he might directly have. You know, he's got some good targets. Prior Reiners, we mentioned, you know, one of his top receivers, Leo Raz, Jordan Schrader, Brody Beaver, and Adrian Cherry in the backfield. So hopefully they can get those guys free and make some big plays, kind of use whatever worked the first time around with some wrinkles. And of course, the Rams have really caught fire. Stanley Cooper, over 1,200 yards rushing on 145 carry. So, you know, both of these teams score a lot. Liberty at 38 points a game, Southeast Polk at 34. So I think you're going to see maybe whoever's running the scoreboard get one of those wrist braces so you don't get carpal tunnel, because these two teams could light it up a little bit. But I like Liberty's chances. I do.
Can West beat Dowling? Speaking of teams that have a high-powered offense, that it'd be both those teams.
and with no disrespect to West, I don't think so. Dowling just looks so good, you know. It's going to be a tough chore, and they're going to have everything kind of go right to be able to come out with a win here. You know, this is the first time that they faced each other since the championship games in 2016, 2017, when both of them played for titles that year. So, you know, you've got West's offense against Dowling's defense. The Trojans score 43 points a game, but Dowling only gives up 8.1 against a really, really tough schedule that they face all year long. So, just, you know, you've got Reese Wheeler, who's had a great season passing the ball. Ethan Headings, who's been his top target, over 1,100 yards receiving and 13 touchdowns. Campbell Janis has had almost 1,300 yards rushing. A lot of great performances, but I just don't know if they have enough to outlast Dowling.
All right. That's what we got for for the quarterfinal round, folks, in every class. KJ, you are going to be, I can't remember, honestly, Friday night. Or tomorrow night, you're going to be in Marengo.
I'll be in Marengo on Thursday night, and then I'm heading back up to Manchester for the Waller West Delaware rematch. I was there the first time, and looking forward to a game similar to that regular season matchup, and looking forward to it again. And where are you going to be?
I will be, let's see, Edco at Glenbrook Rhinebeck tomorrow night, an eight player, and then back down to Iowa City Liberty for a second straight week just to watch Liberty play Southeast Polk. Reddick got banged up in the second quarter of their game Friday night and sat out a series and a half. I think he just got hit low, probably in the shin or the leg or the knee or something. But he came back in and was his normal self in the, you know, late in the second quarter and then the second half. So one thing about Liberty that I really noticed, Pilchin, is that you mentioned it was so many different guys that play at the skill positions. It's crazy. You know, rotating in and out, you know, at receiver and running back. And that's a huge advantage, I think, when it comes down to late games, guys be fresh and whatnot. So, anyway, that's where I'm going to be at JEJE66 at KJ Pilcher, our Twitter handles. Jeff Linder is going to be out and about as well Friday night. At
ADM and Xavier.
There we go. So we'll have, and then I think we're covering a couple other games out and about as well. So this is a fun couple of 3 weeks, certainly as we hit the end of the high school football season. Folks, thanks for joining us this week. And, you know, again, we'll have coverage of everything from Thursday and Friday night for you. And I don't know if we're going to do this next week or not. We'll have to wait and see with the schedules and everything like that. So, thank you, folks. KJ, thank you. And take us out.
Remember, when you're out and about at the state quarterfinals, keep your head on a swivel.